This is Todd Sommerfeld. I'm a sales agronomist for CHS in Crookston, Minnesota. We are pleased to bring you the update from the Red River Farm Network, CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Tuesday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Randy Conan along with Tyler Donaldson. We'll also hear a report from Whitney Pittman as well. USDA announced the final rule to the Packers and Stockyards Act. The inclusive competition and market integrity rule will take effect in 60 days, according to Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack.
This is going to help producers and growers who have become increasingly vulnerable to a range of practices that unjustly exclude them from economic opportunity and disadvantage them and undermine market integrity in the livestock and poultry industry. The Packers and Stockyard Act prohibits unjust discrimination, undue prejudice, and deception, and this final rule will provide for a clear, more effective standard by which to govern all of this in the modern work marketplace.
The new rule aims to provide clearer standards and protect producers.
The final rule prohibits as unjust discrimination and undue prejudice, adverse treatment against livestock producers and poultry growers by packers, swine contractors, and live poultry dealers based on race, color, religion, national origin, sex, disability, marital status, or age. It also prohibits discrimination against a livestock and poultry producer cooperative. The rule will identify retaliatory practices as those that interfere with lawful communications or refusal to communicate, interfere with the assertion of contract or rights or packers and stockyard rights, interferes with the participation in associations or cooperatives, interferes with the exploring or entering into a business relationship with a competing packer or swine contractor or live poultry dealer.
North Dakota Farmers Union President Mark Watney sees the new inclusive competition and market integrity rule as a good first step in helping to fix some of the issues that producers and processors are facing.
I think we're in the early stages of a kind of a movement to address a number of the issues that we've been concerned about. And, of course, it all takes a number of steps. So I see this as a positive move forward by the administration. And just the fact that we have a lot of folks from the judicial to the executive branch to the legislative branch looking at this is great. I think that some of these steps will need to even go further as we're seeing these extreme concentration issues in just about everything farmers and ranchers either buy into or sell into.
Watney says there is still much more work to be done, though.
We've ignored this situation for, you know, almost 70, 80 years, it seems like, and through, you know, both Democratic and Republican administrations. So you know, the built-up of, you know, in the transportation systems, in the seed and chemical systems, in the packing systems, all those things have been challenges for us. So we hope that we'll see in the near future more opportunities to get some more competition in these systems so that the farmers and ranchers can get a little bit more fair shake on what they pay for things and what they sell into.
The American Meat Institute does not support the changes to the Packers and Stockyard Act. President and CEO Juliana Potts says these changes have nothing to do with competition, but are an attempt to apply federal control over business contracts. Potts says Congress never intended to give the government such broad authority over meat industry contracts.
Red River Farm Network is on the road today covering a meeting on regulatory authority around the White Earth Reservation. Farm broadcaster Whitney Pittman has this report.
According to a newly launched website, H2 Land Stewards is a coalition of citizens and businesses preserving Minnesota's long history of regulatory integrity presided over by an accountable state agency. They're working against a lawsuit by the Minnesota White Earth Nation against Monoman County farmer Dave Vipond over a permitting jurisdiction on a proposed irrigation system on his property. The organization held a meeting this morning in Bijoux, Minnesota, and later this afternoon in Ogama to provide background and information to others in the community. Vipond spoke at the meeting and says this is about overreach of the tribal government. Minnesota Department of Agriculture Director of Fertilizer and Pesticide, Josh Sempert, spoke at the meeting saying, in the case of fertilizer and pesticides, the tribe does have authority on the reservation to enforce rules that are at least as restrictive or more strict than federal regulation, but could not speak to the jurisdiction on water issues. A representative of H2 Land Stewards' legal team says the tribes lack jurisdiction over their activities on non-member-owned lands. Exceptions include property owners that have entered into a contract with the band or if that action threatens the health, safety, or political integrity of the band. Stay tuned for more coverage from these meetings. Reporting from Bijou, Minnesota, I'm Whitney Pittman on the Red River Farm Network.
S&W trading analyst Andy Schisler calls the action in the grain markets today quiet and flat.
But it's a consolidation pattern is what we're seeing. After we kind of put the low in here and corn and beans, I know like the Paris wheat kind of got bombed out and was like $7 a metric ton lower, which is kind of a big move, and it's going into the expiration of that contract. And so that kind of has the wheat market down with it, but it's not so extreme. We were up pretty good yesterday, but then Chicago went down and kind of tested the low here again.
Schisler does expect the market to recover.
Like if you follow corn, the 20-day moving average kind of rolls down above the market here, and it's just had a really hard time, you know, going through it or even closing there. And like this one here, like the gap between like the 20-day moving average and the 100-day moving average is about as wide as it gets in corn and beans. So there's a substantial recovery probably coming here, you know, sometime soon. And seasonally, January, February are kind of our worst prices.
The grain markets are a bit lower today. Lowen and Associates market analyst Matt Hines says once again there is a lack of fresh news.
Just not a whole lot of new fundamental news. You know, we had Southern Plains update some crop conditions. Wheat conditions, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, all a little bit lower as expected. Texas corn planting, actually up to about 14% done. You know, the negative side on the wheat, we've still got Russian prices that are dipping into new lows. You know, prices we haven't seen since 2020, which sounds like most of our futures contracts as well. And then also Australian wheat crop looks to be a little bit bigger than expected. Some pretty decent weather as it finishing up.
Reporting Agriculture's Business, this is the Red River Farm Network.
Tuesday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. Cash grain basis bids at the regional grain elevators, followed by the Red River Farm Network, have all moved to the May futures contract to set basis levels. Spring wheat basis ranging from 5 cents under to 50 cents under the Minneapolis May futures. Corn basis ranging from 17 to 50 cents under the May futures. And soybean basis ranging from 86 to $1.20 under the May futures contract.
The latest Ag Economy Barometer released by Purdue University CM Group shows a slight increase in farmer sentiment in February. The February barometer reading reached 111, a 5-point increase from January. This small uptick is being attributed to increased optimism about the future, with future expectations up 7 points. Purdue University Director for Commercial Agriculture Jim Mintert says high input costs and low commodity prices remain the primary concerns for farmers.
U.S. Court of Appeals for the 8th Circuit Court overturned EPA's final rule that revoked all food crop tolerances for chlorpyrifos. NDSU entomologist Mark Botel says this is good news, but there are some things to make note of.
The thing I think people need to realize is that it is state specific, so check with your respective state registration system or your Department of Agriculture to make sure the product you want to use is labeled. One really important thing is that the Lors Band branded products cannot be used. Those were withdrawn even before all this big court fight. So they voluntarily removed that from registration.
A few products are currently registered in North Dakota and in Minnesota.
Pilot, or the first two that were registered for use in 2024, are Pilot 4E, similar to the old, essentially, Lors Band 4E, under a new trade name, new manufacturer, and then Pilot 15G, a granular formulation. I just checked the North Dakota Department of Agriculture website this morning, and there's a additional product now that is registered that is called QualiPro Chlorpyrifos 4E. So another, essentially a generic of Lors Band 4E.
The Red Sea and Suez Canal are not major shipping channels for agriculture. However, Scott Sinner from SB&B Foods at Castleton says the impact will be felt.
We may not have a whole lot of U.S. soy going through the Suez Canal, but it all backflows because all the shipments that are supposed to go through there are going out of other places that are taking up taking up vessel space and things out of our normal shipping lanes. And so there's just a lot going on in the world that are affecting shipping. And when you have to go around the southern tip of Africa, or you have to go around the southern tip of South America, it just adds time to the freight. And you know, again, our whole system is based on timing. And so when that gets out of whack, the whole system gets out of whack.
Sinner, who is also a member of the U.S. Soybean Export Council Board, believes the soybean export market is changing.
If we've learned anything, it's that we need to try to diversify our markets. I mean, without a doubt, China's always going to be the biggest buyer. But, you know, Brazil is coming on strong. Obviously, we're not the biggest supplier in the world anymore. And so we're always looking at maximizing our value for the U.S. farmer. And, you know, our market is changing. I mean, we're going to have more meal, and we're still going to have whole soybeans. Don't get me wrong. We're absolutely still going to have whole soybeans. But having more meal available is changing some of our markets that we're going to be selling to.
The North Dakota Agriculture Hall of Fame is set to accept Brian O'Toole and Roger Stuber for their significant contributions to the wheat and cattle industries, respectively. O'Toole, a partner in T.E. O'Toole Farms, has been pivotal in promoting North Dakota-grown wheat globally, serving on various commissions and associations related to wheat production. Stuber, from Stuber Ranch, has demonstrated leadership in the cattle industry, serving as president of several associations and contributing to the long-term planning of the beef industry. Both producers will be inducted into the Hall of Fame on Wednesday.
BNSF Railway has furloughed nearly 400 workers in Kansas, Montana, Nebraska, and Texas. In a statement, BNSF officials said the company has an imbalance with too many employees in areas without enough work and not enough workers where its growth is happening. BNSF has offered location transfers for these employees. This is the Red River Farm Network.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. Precision agriculture is getting a boost in the form of a $200,000 investment from Dakota Carrier Network. Funding expected to help with wireless infrastructure for real-time data analysis and remote equipment management. Working in collaboration with Grand Farm Innovation Campus, DCN aims to stimulate economic growth by boosting crop yields and promoting sustainable farming, with the goal of pushing North Dakota to the forefront of ag innovation.
With what is expected to be an early spring, Westbred cereal account management lead Jeff Cosalny advises growers to be prepared.
As they're going into the season here, you know, picking the right genetics, talking to their seed supplier about, you know, which product should they plant on which acre, right? Sometimes we get, you know, a little bit caught into, hey, it's a single variety or two varieties across the whole farm. And I think there's a lot of great choices out there. We hope it's Westbred, but there may be other choices that are better for that field to optimize the yield.
11 of the 24 National Wheat Yield Contest winners were Westbred varieties.
You know, when I think about yield results, I mean, you kind of look at that. For the Westbred winners, we averaged anywhere from 109 bushels to 212 bushels, with their average across all 11 being 139 bushels. So, you know, that's pretty phenomenal wheat. I think everybody, and, you know, and the other impressive part, Don, I mean, we always talk about, you know, yield and quality for those national winners. And two of the bin busters got quality awards from the foundation as well. So you can grow high-yield wheat and high-quality.
Checking markets before we leave you this afternoon. May wheat Minneapolis is down 3¾ cents, 6.55¾. Chicago May wheat down 12½. Kansas City May wheat is down 7¾. May corn down 3 cents at 4.27. July corn's down 3¼. December corn down 3¼ at 4.59¾. May soybeans down 5¾, 11.49¼. August beans are down 5½. November down 1½ at 11.44¾. May meal is down 3.10 a ton. Bean oil is down 13 points. Canola down $1.80 a metric ton, 5.94.20 Canadian. April live cattle, $1.37 higher, 188.05. June's up 95 cents at 183.52. August live cattle, 77 higher, 182.70. The March feeder cattle, 72 higher, 252.27. April's up $1.35 at 257.10. The May feeders 77 higher, 258.55. April lean hogs down $1.15. The May hogs down 52 cents. This is the Red River Farm Network.